The poinsettia is everywhere this time of year. It's beautiful, but where did it come from, and how did it become such a ubiquitous Christmas symbol? This hour, we'll find out. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, will be here. I'll talk with him about the history and transformation of the poinsettia. We'll also talk about caring for these plants once you bring them home. Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron will also be here. And Richard and Chris will answer your questions about the plants in your life. 866-780-9100. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. You may have one or more of them in your home or office right now. They're an essential holiday decoration for businesses and a perennial holiday gift. This hour, we'll talk about poinsettias, where they came from, and why we associate them with Christmas. Later in the hour, we'll answer your questions about the plants and trees in your life. Chris Curry is here today, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. Hello, Chris.
Howdy. How you doing?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Sure.
Richard Giron is also here, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
And Chris, we'll start with you. You are our poinsettia expert. So, let's start with where they came from.
Well, how far back do you want to go?
Let's go all the way back.
Originally, they're native to Guatemala. That would be their endemic range, or their native range where they're originally from. But they have had a northward migration that has occurred. And I think the time period that we'd be most interested in is when they first crossed over into the United States and started to be used as a holiday plant. And that happened right around 1828, 1829 in Philadelphia. So that's kind of the transition of, they started out in Guatemala, they ended up in Philadelphia, and then actually from Philadelphia, they went over to Scotland and they went to Europe, and that's where they were formally named and given their scientific name by a Scottish botanist. But then it was really the introduction into the United States and into Europe that made them popular as sort of a potted plant for the holiday times. They were used in gardens and outdoor environments, and they were always associated with Christmas because they always flowered in that same time of the year. But it was really kind of its appeal as an exotic plant into those new markets that it really took off as a more of a holiday plant.
Well, and it is a tropical plant, so people getting excited about this tropical plant in Scotland or in Philadelphia in these colder environments doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. I mean, this needs a lot of care to bloom in the winter.
Well, but if you think about those plants that really have captivated botanists, you know, it's the tropical plants that really have done it because they required a greenhouse or what would have been called a glass house back then. So it took a little bit more care to maintain and manage these plants, and sort of the exotic nature and the advanced care that it took was probably something that appealed to, I guess you would say, the progenitors of the plant nerd.
Okay, so that made them prestigious to have this kind of plant.
Yeah, because you couldn't have a poinsettia flowering if you did not have a greenhouse. So you had to, back when they were first described, and then they would be produced in a greenhouse and brought back to your house. It wasn't just something you could grow in the garden, and it would just be green.
Right. So, okay, we love the color of the poinsettia. We love that bright red color. In the beginning, were all poinsettias red?
That's originally, that is the natural, or the original flower color. Now, you do see, there probably were some white poinsettias in nature. That was probably something similar to when you see a white squirrel that might be melanistic or albino, you know, where it's a simple mutation, which is why it just lacks the color. So there probably were some white ones in the wild occasionally, and those were brought into breeding, and now we do have white ones. In fact, the white poinsettia is very widely grown because that's what's used for those spray-painted poinsettias. It provides a nice canvas for the paints.
And we do see pink as well.
Oh, there's a wide range of colors now. So what happens is when you started to get into breeding poinsettias, then they would purposefully make crosses to create more variety in the color. So you have everything from white, pink, red, you know, kind of all along that shade from white to deep red to deep plum purple. This holiday season, you saw Gold Rush. That's an orange bracted cultivar. Then you see all sorts of variegated or patterns and all sorts of really unique colors that are kind of mixed. There are some that look like a Jackson Pollock painting as well.
Oh, I haven't seen those.
Yeah,
yet.
Those are called, it really does look like someone took a paintbrush and splattered paint on the leaf, except it wasn't actually done by someone. That's just the genetics of the color. And that's what those are called, the glitter or the jester types.
Now, in breeding for those different colors, how is that done? Because it's a pretty unique system in poinsettias, isn't it?
Yeah, so the big colorful parts that we're attracted to, that's not actually a flower. That's called a bract. It's a modified leaf. And that's actually the advertisement in nature for the insect to come to the flower. And the flower is actually the little cyathea. If you look down in the center, there's some little kind of interesting looking botanical structures, and that's the actual flower itself. And so when we breed poinsettias, you have to make crosses where you're using the pollen from one plant and pollinating a different plant. And you do that in a very controlled fashion, and then you grow on the seedlings to see which cultivars or which colors you want to keep and maybe keep breeding with or select for commercial use. Once they're identified for commercial use, then we propagate them vegetatively by cutting, so they're all clones. But for the breeding of poinsettias, that's where we're actually making controlled crosses and using seedlings.
And I think we've talked about this before. Isn't there a bacteria or...
Yeah, there's a phytoplasma.
Okay, tell me about that.
I just love to say that word. What happened is poinsettia growers used to grow multiple cuttings in a single pot, and that would grow up and then you would sell that plant. But like any sort of business, there's trying to approach production and reduce costs. So that what they started to do instead of planting multiple cuttings is you plant a single cutting and then you would pinch the tip and allow branches to form, and those would replace what were the multiple cuttings. But poinsettias didn't always branch well, but then they found that some branched really, really well and made really nice pinched plants. And they ended up finding that there's a virus that actually makes the plant branch more freely. And so when poinsettia breeders come up with cool new colors, but they don't branch well, they have the nice colored bracts that they want, so they graft it to those free branching plants. And that phytoplasma, that virus, is transmitted to the new cool color that you're developing. And then when you take cuttings off of it after that, it will be free branching. It's really unique, and there's not a lot of instances where we have that same deliberate introduction of a plant virus or a phytoplasma into plants for that purpose.
Let's talk about what it takes to produce enough poinsettias for every single one of us to have one in our home or office. I mean, there are so many of these plants for sale everywhere. What kind of poinsettia production needs to happen every year?
Well, poinsettias, they're actually a pretty long-term crop. I always laugh that I'm always kind of out of sync with everything else that's happening, because right now, as far as a greenhouse grower, you're kind of on the tail end of production. And right now you're really thinking about Easter, because your Easter lily bulbs are going to be coming out of the cooler. You're going to have to start forcing those. So really, you have to start thinking about poinsettias around the 4th of July. And that's when you start to get your cuttings in from Central America. Now, like I mentioned earlier, they're propagated by cuttings. And so all these cuttings are grown at what we call stock plant farms. And stock plants are those big mother plants that we harvest the cuttings off of. And they're shipped into the greenhouses, and then they're rooted in the greenhouse. And that's where we're, again, growing roots onto those individual cuttings. And it happens at a pretty rough time of year, because if you know how sunny and warm it is outside in July, can you imagine what it's like inside the greenhouse? And they're a tropical plant, but they're not that, no plant is that tropical. Greenhouse growers actually try to shade their greenhouse to make it a little bit cooler. And then once they root, then they start to develop. And then we have to do that pinching process to start making some branches. And that happens, sometime in maybe August, depending on the size of your plant.
And we've talked on this program many times about what we need to do to get poinsettias to bloom at the time of year that we want that color. So that's pretty tricky. In a greenhouse, how do you do it?
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways you can do it. One, which we call the natural schedule, which is you would just allow the days to become short right around or shortly after the third week in September, depending on which exact poinsettia you're growing. But near the end of September, the days become short, and that triggers flowering. So you can try and schedule it all around that natural season. Or let's say you're trying to have some poinsettias in the market a week or two before Thanksgiving. You know, an early crop is what we would call it. Well, you'd need to start those short days before the days outside are actually short. So greenhouse growers have these large screens that are drawn across the crop. And they're not just shade cloth reducing the light, but they're completely blacking out the light. And they make that shorter day inside of the greenhouse. And so that's what you have to do if you want to get those earlier crops that you want to have in flower before the natural days would be short enough. Alternatively, if you're trying to grow a real late crop, when the days get short, you need to make sure you provide light to keep it a longer day to keep them vegetative. So growers have to do all this scheduling because usually you don't just have one market date. You're usually supplying for several weeks on end. So they have to schedule multiple different crops.
How long does the bloom last?
Oh, it can last. It's not uncommon if you see someone who's got a green thumb to walk into a house in the springtime and see those red bracts still hanging on, looking pretty decent, while the new shoots might be growing up and having all green leaves.
All right. Now, a lot of us who do have green thumbs, actually, I'm not included in that group, but a lot of people who do take great care of their poinsettias and they have them in their home all winter long and they want to keep them because they get attached to this beautiful plant.
Sure.
So if you want to keep a poinsettia, what do you need to do?
You have to do the same thing that greenhouse grower is doing. You have to either give them naturally short days. So after the sun sets, make sure your reading light isn't turned on, or your living room light isn't turned on, that's going to be interrupting the poinsettia. Or you have to put that poinsettia in a place where it won't get light. So maybe you've got a guest bedroom where the lights aren't going to be turned on. Or if the lights are going to be all on all around your house, then you've got to shuffle it back and forth between a closet each day. But I think a great idea would be to go support the great Iowa greenhouse industry, who does a fantastic job at producing poinsettias of all sizes and colors.
And this is also something that I know the horticulture students at Iowa State University get involved with year.
Yep, they've got a poinsettia sale indeed. And they were growing a variety of colors. I know they had the red, white, the glitter types, and they also had, what else did they have? I think they had pinks as well, I believe.
All right. Well, we are going to take a short break. And if you have questions about poinsettias, holiday plants, or any plants and trees, you can give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, is here, along with Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. We'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions about any of the plants or trees in your life. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University, and Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. And Richard, I have good news. I did manage to get my bulbs in. I did it the morning of Black Friday.
Great.
In this tiny window that I had between the ground thawing and getting hit by a major blizzard on Sunday.
Right.
So
this weekend does not sound good.
No. Anyway, I'm relieved I made it in just under the wire. Next year, I resolve to do better and get them in earlier. Let's get to some questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Karen sent this email from Ames. She said, we need to have a large branch from a soft maple tree removed. Is it better to wait until later in the winter, or is now okay?
It doesn't really matter. You can do it now. Basically, we like to do it in winter or possibly in midsummer. So it could be done anytime between now and early April, or possibly in July or August.
All right. And maple trees are not as finicky, obviously, as oak trees are.
Now, if you prune them in late winter, they will bleed a lot, but that doesn't harm them. So don't worry about it.
Okay. So you can see the sap flowing.
Right. If you prune them in late winter, they bleed a lot and they will bleed for several days. And that does freak out some people, but don't worry about it. It's harmless.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your question. Suzanne is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
My question is how to propagate a new plant that I got. The plant's called Pilea, P-I-L-E-A.
Okay. You should be able to do that by just cuttings, where I would take a stem cutting, maybe 3 or 4 inches in length, make a nice clean cut just below where a leaf comes out on the stem, pinch off that lowest leaf, and then I would get some coarse sand or some perlite, put that in a pot, moisten it, and then stick your stem in that, and then keep that rooting medium moist, and it should root.
Okay. And is perlite the same as vermiculite, or is that different?
They're different. The perlite is white.
Okay.
It's very, very light in weight. Vermiculite can work too, but I would prefer perlite or coarse sand, something that holds some moisture but doesn't stay too wet.
Okay, great. And then one question also about this plant. I see around, there are about 4 stalks growing out of the dirt, and then, of course, all sorts of these leaves, but there's this little white, it looks like white dust that's growing on the soil.
Okay. I would assume that might be some type of mold. And I think what I would probably do, I might take like a kitchen knife and just very, very carefully kind of work up the soil, because that mold is probably growing on something that's kind of damp. And if you kind of work up, let's say, the upper 1/4 inch, 1/2 inch of soil, then that's going to dry better after watering.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's an email from Earl. He says, is it too late to do a second application of herbicide to control creeping Charlie? I live in Story County.
Yes, it's too late. With the rain and stuff, yes, it's too late,
all
unfortunately.
Right. I knew he didn't live around here because he would have to shovel
yes.
the whole yard. All right, so next year is your year for that. Let's go back to the phones. Tim is on the line in Polk City. Hi, Tim.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got some soft maple trees in my front yard, and the roots are, they're probably about 20, 25 years old. The roots are coming up above the ground. It's difficult to mow,
right.
And I'm wondering how much dirt I can put on top of those roots without harming the tree.
That's a very common characteristic of maples. They have very shallow roots, and as they grow, they tend to emerge from the soil. I have a maple in my backyard that's very same thing. You can't put on a lot. I mean, you could put on like 2 or 3 inches, but the roots are near the surface because that's where they get water and nutrients, but they also need to breathe. And so you can't bring in, let's say, 1 foot of soil and put it around the tree because you're going to suffocate some of the roots. So you can put on 2 or 3 inches, and that may hide the roots for a while, but in a few years, as they grow, they may reappear. So it's kind of a temporary thing. Another solution to that might be to simply forget the grass and maybe mulch the area so you don't have to worry about mowing it. But in my case, I just know where the roots are, and I have to mow in a certain direction so I don't hit them, and I do that every year. But it's kind of annoying, but you really can't cover them with a lot of soil.
What about, any kind of mulch? What about river rock?
If I was going to use a mulch, I think I would probably use wood chips or shredded bark. It's much better for the plants than rock. And if you put on rock and someday you want to remove it, it's very, very hard to do. I would use wood chips or shredded bark.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Tim. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Next up, we've got Gail, north of Iowa City. Hi, Gail.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I have some old raspberry bushes that never bore. My husband, long deceased, has put them out, and They're in the back. Behind us is a part of our lot is on a road fill, and the other part goes down in the ravine where the drainage is, and these are at the top of that. And I've tried to cut them back for years, but they spread, and I've tried a little bit of liquid Roundup that a neighbor lent me and an artist paintbrush, and would cut the stems and paint a little bit of that on there, not wanting to do that because I hate that stuff. But they keep surviving. They'll be gone somewhat for a while, but now they've gotten over into the neighbor's back downhill part into the ravine, and they're just multiplying. So I want to know what to do that's
well, they're probably red raspberries, and red raspberries spread pretty aggressively by underground roots or rhizomes. And so to kill them, you have to destroy all those roots and rhizomes. And so one option is to dig them. If you do that, most likely you're not going to get them all. There may be a few roots or rhizomes left in the ground, and they'll resprout. And when they do, you have to dig those up. So you have to be persistent. If you use a herbicide, a Roundup would be the choice, glyphosate, where you would cut off the canes and then apply the Roundup directly to the cut surface. But again, when you do that, you're not going to destroy all the roots and rhizomes. Any new ones that sprout, you have to treat again. So it's going to take some persistence.
All right. And if you, I know that, you know, if you treat the sprout off of a tree with Roundup, you may damage the tree. If you want to control your raspberry patch and keep it small, is Roundup a danger? Could you end up hurting
You don't want to do that, no. If you want to totally get rid of your raspberries, you don't want them anymore at all, then you could use the Roundup. If you want to simply destroy or control them or contain them to a certain area, then digging would be the best way.
All right. How about mowing? If you've got these sprouts coming up, can you mow the area to keep them under control?
You can mow, but you're not going to get rid of them. In that, as soon as you stop mowing, they're going to come back up and grow. So you can kind of keep them from getting tall, but you're not getting rid of them.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Gail. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Terry is on the line in Green Mountain next. Hi, Terry.
Hi. I got a French lace weigela. Weigela, mm-hmm. Okay. And it's like 6 feet tall and 6 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to kind of tame it down a little bit, you know, cut some. When should I do that, and how far can I cut it back?
So what I would do is wait and not do anything at this point. Wait till next spring. If there's any dieback, as far as winter dieback, prune out the dead wood early next spring. Then go ahead and let it bloom, okay? And then after blooming, cut it back. And you can cut it back by maybe 25% or so as far as the overall size.
Okay.
This plant blooms on old wood. That's the bloom in early summer. But they also bloom on new growth later on in the summer. So you want to have that bloom in late spring and early summer, and then immediately prune it.
Okay, wait till it blooms, you mean wait till it blooms completely this coming summer, spring?
Right, that late spring bloom. Let it bloom heavily at that point. When it's done, then prune it back.
Late spring, let it bloom, and then cut it back?
Correct.
Okay, the other question, can I transplant any of the branches to grow another one?
Well, the woody stems do not root very well. What you could do if you wanted... they put on new growth next spring, okay? Mm-hmm. When that new growth partially hardens, typically around late June, early July, go out and cut off those new shoots, maybe 4 or 5 inches in length. Make the bottom cut below leaves, just below leaves. Pinch off the bottommost leaves, and then... fill a pot or tray with either coarse sand or perlite, moisten that, and then stick those in that material and keep it moist, and hopefully they'll root.
Okay. It's a beautiful plant. Like you said, it bloomed twice this past spring, summer. I thought that was pretty cool.
Right. That's what they do. That's what they bloom very heavily in late spring, and then they have some additional blooms later on in the summer on the new growth.
Okay. One more thing. Like you said, late spring is let it bloom and then trim it back about 25%.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100. Regina's on the line in North Liberty with a question for you, Chris. Hi, Regina.
Good morning. I was given a beautiful poinsettia last Christmas, and it's still alive, and it's going strong. It's got beautiful green leaves on it. I was just given a new one, and I noticed that the new leaves on my plant from last year are considerably smaller. It has a few leaves that have a red hint to them, but they're not. The whole plant didn't turn red, and now I understand why from your earlier explanation. But I wanted to ask you about fertilizer. What should I be doing for this plant?
Yeah, so plants can be, they're kind of like people, and their appetites vary, so to speak. And poinsettias, in the greenhouse world, we refer to them as heavy feeders. And now, do you know, when you look at just the regular green leaf on it, would you consider it kind of a darkish green, or do you think it's kind of a lightish green? When you got it last year, if you remember.
Yes, it was darkish, and it's still darkish.
Yep, okay, so you even see differences based on the actual green leaf of the poinsettia cultivar, because what we call the dark green cultivars, which it sounds like you have, are the heavier of those heavy feeding poinsettias, whereas those lighter green leaves use less fertilizer. The reason being is that darker green comes from more chlorophyll, and with all that extra chlorophyll, there's more proteins that require that nitrogen to keep them green, so they just require more fertilizer. So what I'm suspecting is that, did you fertilize this plant as you were growing it this year?
No, I have not.
Okay, that's what I think is probably going to be the culprit. So you could go ahead and, you could use a general purpose houseplant food, but you can fertilize poinsettias pretty regularly, and then we'll respond very favorably. And I think you'll get that larger leaf size.
Okay, great. I just like to mention I moved to Iowa last year from Hawaii, and a lot of people in Hawaii plant their poinsettias outdoors after Christmas. I've seen poinsettia hedges and poinsettia trees, and they're magnificent.
Yeah. It's the climate's a little different there.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not going to take my plant out.
No, but Chris, you can take them out in the summer, right?
Absolutely, you can. You may not want to put them on, a south-facing deck with no cover on it. They don't like that really, really, really bright light, but they can absolutely take the outdoor temperatures.
All right. Well, Regina, thank you for your call, and enjoy winter in Iowa. We're happy to have you here. Hannah's on the line next in Iowa City. Hi, Hannah.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have a question regarding trimming of pin oaks. I'm getting mixed information on when the best time of year or temperature is to trim those.
Okay. The best time is winter, and that's typically December, January, and February. Now, this year, we could have probably done it starting in mid-November. Basically, you want to do it when we have cold weather, and that kind of varies from year to year. And so you typically want to get it done typically by the 1st of March.
Okay. And then another question about the pin oaks. The people that lived here before us kind of volcano mulched around them, and I'm wanting to remove that mulch away, but I'm concerned about exposing the roots, which I think may be above ground. What tips would you have for that?
Even if you find some surface roots, I wouldn't worry about it. Oaks tend not to have a lot of surface roots. I think what I'd probably do is maybe gradually remove some of that mulch, and then maybe wait a while, and then maybe take some more off until you get it down where you want it. But I wouldn't worry too much about surface roots per se.
And when you say volcano mulch, you're just saying like a giant pile?
Around the trunk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just kind of in the shape of a volcano all around the trunk on the bottom.
Yeah, that's not, people do that. Some people do that. That's not desirable. Typically, you want to have maybe 3 to 4 inches of mulch around your tree. And we typically advise to leave a few inches between the actual trunk and the mulch layer, maybe 4 or 5, 6 inches, so that if you have too much mulch resting against the trunk and then you have a lot of rainy weather, it may keep the base of the trunk too wet and may lead to some rot issues. So that's the problem.
Okay, well, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Hannah. And how far do you want the mulch to go out around a tree, Richard?
As far as you want. It's up to you. With most people, their main issue is mowing, and I would go out at least 2 or 3 feet.
All right, so you don't have to get close to the trunk when you mow and risk nicking it.
Right, or hitting a branch, right.
All right, we are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. With me today, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and we are here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Richard Giron, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist, and Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. And let's go back to the phones. Mark is on the line in Pella. Hi, Mark.
Yes, I'm calling about the blue spruce. Why they are losing their needles and what can be done about it.
Well, one possibility would be it might be a needle cast, which is a fungal disease, fairly common on larger specimens, especially in a windbreak. Basically, what it does, it will cause the needles to drop prematurely. Typically, they remain on the tree for 3 or 4 years. If they become infected, they drop off sooner. So the branch has fewer needles, and eventually that branch tends to die. As far as prevention, in theory, you can apply a fungicide, but you have to do it twice in the spring. You have to do it 3 to 4 years in a row. If you have like a windbreak situation, it's very, very hard to do. So I'm not sure how practical it is.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for your call.
And what they can do is if they're not sure, they can send a sample to the ISU Plant and Insect Diagnostic Clinic. And if they send them a proper sample, if that is present, they can basically identify it and make sure that's what they have.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And please remember when you call to turn down your radio and listen through the telephone. Sharon is on the line next in Marshalltown. Hi, Sharon.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a question about my English lavender that I planted in the spring. I brought it inside, and it just seems like it's drying up. Is there a way to keep it from dying?
Well, it's not a very easy plant to grow inside. So that may be the problem right there. The only thing you could probably do is give it plenty of light. You may want to use some artificial lighting like fluorescent lights. Don't keep it too wet, but it's not a plant that really adapts well to indoors, so it may not survive.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call. It's just cold here sometimes.
And indoors is a very different environment compared to outdoors. So,
all right. Next up, Carrie in Dubuque. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. Yeah, I'm calling because I planted about 5 years ago a Bing cherry tree. Bought it at a nursery, a little sapling, and it did well. And then it developed a split in the trunk above the graft. And now it's getting bigger and a little in the trunk, but near on the other side of that split now there's like looks like a little bracket or shelf fungi sort of.
Yeah.
And I'm concerned
concerned, and it didn't really put any cherries out at all last year.
Right. There's an injury there, and now we have some wood decay, which is invading the area. That is probably going to spread, and so the life of the tree obviously is probably going to be shortened drastically. The Bing cherry is not really well suited to Iowa. And so I think if you want to plant another tree, I would try something like either black gold or white gold. They come from Cornell University in New York. These are extremely hardy sweet cherry varieties. They're the best choice for Iowa. And I believe they're both self-fruitful, so you need just one tree. So I'm thinking the Bing cherry probably won't be around much longer. And if you want sweet cherries, I would plant either white gold or black gold.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Carrie. 866-780-9100 or Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org for email. Let's do a few email questions here. This one's from Nikki. I received a bonsai tree for a gift about a month ago. It's dying. I don't know what to do. The soil feels very compact, and I'm tempted to repot it. And I've been watering it every day, but the leaves are dry and falling off. Is there a chance of saving it?
Well, it's hard to say without some additional details, because bonsai just means literally plant in pot. And so it can be a temperate bonsai, which might require a cool overwintering period, just like any other temperate tree. Or it could be a tropical bonsai, in which case it would do fine as a house plant. So if it was a temperate one that they've got indoors, maybe that's a problem. However, when they mentioned the soil feeling compact, it makes me wonder, some bonsai have rock that are glued all over the top of the substrate, because those are typically going to be your tropical bonsai that aren't maybe artisanally grown, is a way that you could put it. They tend to be shipped over longer distances, and that's why they glue that that kind of rock on the top of the growing soil.
So it looks good in the store.
Yeah, but it can be a little bit harder to maintain. So I'm not sure without more detail. I don't want to give false hope.
All right, but also when she mentions watering it daily, that's usually a bit much, right?
It all depends on the soil or the substrate that it's growing in. Some bonsai growers will grow their trees in a substrate that's got quite a lot of almost crushed gravel in it, and so it's very porous. And if it's a tropical one in a warm house, it may require that type of attention, but it could be getting overwatered, or again, if it's somehow running off the surface of that glued,
then it's not getting watered at all
potentially. So it might be worthwhile just setting it in a dish and trying to get water to come up through the holes in the bottom of the container, doing sub-irrigation. That might be a good way to kind of re-wet the soil.
Well, and this is advice from a mother of an 11-year-old boy who is obsessed with bonsai plants. There is so much information online about bonsai plants, and I'm sure that it's not all completely foolproof. But if you figure out what kind it is, there's somebody who will tell you how to take care of that specific plant.
And I think a big part is just figuring out what the species is and if it's a tropical or a temperate. Because that right there, those two bonsai, they would be treated very differently at this time of the year.
All right. Let's get to some more email questions. We've got a couple of different Christmas cactus questions.
Cool.
Sherry says, I inherited a Christmas cactus from my mother this year, and I'm uncertain of how to care for it. How much sun, water, warmth does it need? Can I split it? When is it safe to repot?
So let's get to it with that question. So for care, they don't want to be in a totally direct south-facing window, especially during the summer. In the winter, that might be fine because the sun is going to be less intense, but they don't want the full sun of the summer. Other times of the year, they can definitely take higher light. What you're growing it in, that is going to affect how often you water it. Now, some people will grow theirs in what you might think of like a traditional cacti mix where it's got a little bit more sand, but you can really grow them in just the regular peat and perlite houseplant growing media that you buy in a bag. That works best. You can divide it depending on how large it is. You follow those leaves or those phylloclades down to the soil, and depending on how many are coming out of the soil, then you can absolutely divide it. You can also propagate it. But I sometimes will just twist off the little leaves or phylloclades and stick them right in the base of the pot, especially if it's that peat and perlite media, and they can root right in the container like that. They do appreciate fertilizer. In fact, I think that's something I would say just about for any houseplant. Apply fertilizer, and a lot of times that'll perk plants up quite a bit. Let's see, I'm wondering which on that list we didn't cover.
All right, well, I think you covered pretty much everything. How about watering? How much water do they want?
You don't need to grow it bone dry like a regular cactus. You can keep it kind of moderately moist. You don't want to keep it saturated all the time. In order to have them flower, this is kind of cool. You can do it one of two different ways. If you're going to have it grown in warm temperatures, like room temperature, say, you have to treat it just like a poinsettia. It needs that short day or that long interrupted dark period. Now, if you have cooler temperatures, then the day length becomes less important. So they kind of have two different ways they can flower. And that's going to be a cool temperature, kind of around the upper 50s, or short days under normal temperatures.
All right. And Richard, I think you've talked about putting a Christmas cactus in a spare bedroom during the
right.
months that it's not on display.
Right. Like September, make sure it's in a room that you really don't use the lights on at night. If you have temperatures, let's say around 60, 65, that's perfectly fine. And if they receive just natural light, then they will bloom.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And when do you want them to bloom? Of course, we call them Christmas cactus. We call them holiday cactus. When do you want those blooms to start appearing?
You can't really control that much. They typically start blooming. Mine started blooming, around mid-November. Some are still blooming, but they'll typically be done probably by mid to late December.
Yeah, it depends on kind of the genetic background. Because the Thanksgiving cactus are those that flower earlier, and the Christmas cactus are those that will flower a little bit later, and that all relates into when it starts sensing that short day or how short of a day it needs. But they've hybridized them, so they also have these intermediary times. So that's why they tend to call them holiday cacti, just because they kind of have a broad background in flowering time, but it's after those days get short.
All right. They're all so beautiful no matter what holiday you celebrate.
Yeah.
So, all right. Let's go back to the phones. John is with us on the road. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. What's your question?
Well, I've got a pagoda dogwood that I planted in my yard in about 22, 25 years ago, something like that. It's been a beautiful tree. The squirrels just love it in the fall. Anyway, it started getting some cracks in the bark along the base, and now I'm losing a lot of branches. Look like they're dying. Now, I do mow around it. I have another one over in a fence that seeded itself in. It does not get any attention around the bottom of it, but the limbs are starting to die on that too. I just wonder if there's something I could do.
Well, it may be a fungal canker. They are susceptible to fungal cankers, and that is typically caused by some type of plant stress, whether it's the weather, whatever. It is a fungus, but fungicides do not control cankers. So the only thing you can do is to give the plant the best care possible and to prune out any dead limbs. That's all you can really do.
Okay.
Now, one thing that might be helpful would be in the future, for example, if we have a prolonged dry period, maybe go ahead and water that plant. That plant tends to like partial shade and kind of a moist soil, but not wet, but moist. And so a lot of sun, a lot of heat, and very dry conditions can be very stressful.
Yeah, we've got an irrigation system, so
when
it gets dry, it gets watered.
Okay.
I usually whip her off.
All righty,
thank you. I'll turn her back and see what I got.
All right, thanks a lot for your call, John. Next up, Heather in Iowa City. Hi, Heather.
Hi. I have a question. I really love lemon cypress trees and the juniper pom-poms, kind of the whimsy and the color of those. And I know the lemon cypress in particular is not suitable for Iowa. I'm just wondering if there's any suggestions of what might be something that would work for this zone.
You want to grow them where again?
In Iowa.
Okay, but as in the front yard or?
I get, there's a lot of trees around us, but it gets plenty of sunlight during the day.
Okay. Well, probably you're going to be dealing with mainly pine, spruce, fir, cedars, junipers, those types of plants. And there are some dwarf type conifers that might be very, very interesting that you might find attractive. And so those might be appropriate. So
okay,
we're basically, as far as in Iowa, it's basically pine, spruce, fir, juniper, and arborvitae for the most part as far as evergreens. But there are some nice, very unique dwarf conifers that you may want to look at.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, we've got Josh in Ames. Hi, Josh.
Yeah, hey, guys. I have a burnt oak tree that I planted about 10 years ago that's just been doing really amazing stuff, just growing really well. And just this last year in early August, the branches have started to die off. You know, one would go, and then I check on it. The leaves would die. I'd take off one of the shoots and break it. There was no moisture in it, so, like, I think it's dead. And then it just spreads through the entire tree until there's just now one limb that was still alive at the end of fall here. Wondering if there's anything that can be done or if I just have to cut the thing down.
Well, I'm not sure exactly what is going on. It possibly could be oak wilt, possibly.
Okay.
But it sounds like the plant is basically dying. I think it's a lost cause.
Yeah.
And so okay. I would let it leaf out next spring, see what it looks like. If most of the tree is dead, I'd remove it. I think it's a lost cause.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of what I thought. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Josh. Here's a question from Scott in Altoona. The lawn contractor at my home association here in Altoona spread fertilizer on our frozen grass on Wednesday. I was told the little white pellets are winter fertilizer. Is this helpful or a ripoff? I worry about nitrogen pollution in our Iowa rivers.
Well, you can fertilize in fall. Typically, we like to do this around early to mid-November when the ground is clearly not frozen. And what happens is that when you do that, when it rains, it does soak into the ground, and then the plant roots will absorb that, but the actual foliage no longer is growing, so the plant will basically kind of absorb the nutrients, kind of store it, but they'll also use some of that to have some root growth because the roots keep on growing until the actual ground freezes. So when you apply a fertilizer in the fall, like in early to mid-November, you get some nice root growth, but no top growth. And you also get the storage of nutrients in the plant itself so that you get nice green up early next spring. But doing it in late November, I think, might be a little bit too late.
All right, and here's a question from Morgan, also in Altoona. We purchased an 8-foot or so elm tree from the Mid-American program this fall. Unfortunately, we've not had a chance to plant it yet. Is it a goner? Can it be kept over winter and planted in spring?
What I would do is go out there and find a location, hopefully dig a hole. You may need some help doing that if it's partially frozen. But dig a hole and set the pot in the ground, leave it there over winter, and then dig it up next spring and plant it.
And cross your fingers.
It should be okay.
All right. We also have this tip from Myron. He said that we should all look up Joel Poinsett, who gave the poinsettia its name, because he's a fascinating person. So little extra reading assignment from Horticulture Day today. Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. Chris Curry, thank you.
You betcha.
Chris Curry, Assistant Professor of Horticulture at Iowa State University. We'll be back again with Horticulture Day the week after next. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.